Hello, and welcome to Pod Rights, a series of podcasts from the Australian Human Rights Commission. I'm Graham Innes, the Disability and Race Discrimination Commissioner. At 45, we become mature-age workers. If we're under 18, we earn lower wages, and nana naps and similar ageist terms are regular parts of our vocabulary. But whilst we do have age discrimination legislation, we don't have a commissioner to administer it. Well, that's all about to change. The government recently announced the appointment of Susan Ryan as Australia's first age discrimination commissioner, and Susan's here to talk with me on Pod Rights today. A parliamentarian and educator, Susan worked as a schoolteacher and tutored in English literature. She was elected as a senator for the ACT in 1975 and was the first woman to hold a cabinet post in a federal Labor government. In fact, she presided over the passage of the Sex Discrimination Act in 1984 as the minister assisting the Prime Minister on the status of women. Since leaving politics, Susan has worked for Penguin Books, the Plastics Industry Association, and the Association of Superannuation Funds of Australia. She has also been president of the Australian Institute of Superannuation Trustees and pro-chancellor of the University of New South Wales, and many other things. Susan begins her work at the Commission on the day we put up this podcast. So firstly, Susan, welcome to the Commission and welcome to Pod Rights.
Thank you, Graham, and I'm very, very happy to be here.
What made you think that this role was a role for you? What makes you passionate about these sorts of issues?
Well, when it was suggested to me that I might express an interest in this job, I thought it through. First of all, thinking, would I be the right person? And then I recalled all the work I'd done against discrimination in my parliamentary career and subsequently. And also, I was very influenced by what I'd learned about people in retirement from my years in the superannuation industry. Together with that, I've been most impressed with the way the Australian Human Rights Commission goes out and advocates for human rights in a variety of areas, and I thought it would be right for me to do it, and it would be really an honour to get the chance to work against discrimination again in this very focused way, focusing on age discrimination. And of course, I'm very aware that age discrimination is a serious and widespread problem in our community.
Mm. Well, I'm sure I'm among many other Australians who are pleased that you came to that decision. How do you think that your past experiences will inform your role? You've touched on that already in the answer to the last question, but can you expand on that a little for us?
Well, I think one of the things we have to tackle at the Human Rights Commission is cultural stereotyping. And there is very deep-seated prejudice against older people in particular. As a result, discriminatory behaviour follows. Mm. Now, when I started on the road to equal opportunity for women back at the beginning of the 70s, we not only needed laws and policies, we needed to change the culture. We needed to break down that stereotype that women were only suited to domestic business, that they might be the right people to raise a family, but they should not be let near any responsible job in the workforce. Now, working on that huge cultural change over a long period of time with many other women and men, I came to learn how you tackle cultural prejudice. And that's exactly what we have with age discrimination. It is cultural prejudice. Mm. And so I think my experience and the strategies I learned then, I hope, will be productive here to break down the prejudice that leads to age discrimination.
And having a law and a commissioner and many other people working in the field has, I mean, we haven't got it right yet on gender issues, but we've certainly moved the culture a heck of a long way, haven't we? So you're hopeful, I guess, that we can do the same thing over the next 10 or 20 years in this area?
I'm very hopeful. I mean, if you go back to, say, 1983, before we introduced the Sex Discrimination Act, we were still in a situation where women could be and were often refused loans to get a mortgage, no matter what they earned. They were refused access to a whole variety of jobs, to senior jobs. In universities, they were refused access to research grants. because their professors would say, well, you know, you won't be here for long enough. We're not letting you do this. Women in other areas were told, no, no, you can't go into the trades. Trades are only for boys. So it went on and on and on. And when I speak to young women these days, I think they think I'm making it up. Yeah. They can't believe that then you could have, if you'd got a job, you could let your workmates know that happily you'd become pregnant and you were told, oh, well, you've got to leave. We're not having pregnant women here. So it went, the change was, it took a generation. Mm. And as you rightly say, it's not perfect. Mm. We still have areas of resistance to true equality. But when you look around the workforce, look in all our community organisations, look at who's covering our news and bringing our news, look at sporting organisations, you see women everywhere contributing and being recognised. So I hope we can do the same and see older Australians, mature Australians really being recognised for the contribution they can make, and young Australians too getting a fair break.
Mm. We've had age discrimination law for a few years now, but we haven't had an age discrimination commissioner. Why do you think a commissioner makes a difference or is necessary in Australia?
Well, it's necessary, in my view, because we need that sort of focus on age discrimination. While the commission has had the implementation of the Age Discrimination Act since 2004, and wonderful work has been done by Elizabeth Broderick, who's the Sex Discrimination Commissioner, I think once you have a focus by having a separate commissioner, and that will be my job, that's it, morning, noon and night, I'll be focusing on that. And
let me tell you, Susan, it is morning, noon and night, and sometimes well into the night, but that's all right.
But I'll be inspired by you, Graham. You've made so many advances in disability, anti-discrimination and disability, that you'll be my role model.
Oh.
But I do think, you know, having someone focus, as you focused on disability, it allows you to draw attention in a constructive way to the problems, and I hope I'll be able to facilitate some of the solutions.
Mm. Oh, no, I'm sure that can happen. How do you think ageing and older people are viewed within our community? Again, you've referred briefly to that, but there's a problem there, isn't there?
There is a problem, and it's a strange problem. Like a lot of cultural things, there's a bit of contradiction there. I mean, everyone who listens to this podcast and everyone I know knows an older person they love and they think is fantastic. So many people, you know, love their nanas, their grandpas or their old aunt. They love a school teacher who wants to set them on the right track and they still go and visit her. You know, everyone knows that there are wonderful older people, but somehow when it comes to the workforce or when it comes to recognising the capacity to, contribute to a community organisation, even to volunteering, they suddenly go blank and say, oh, no, no, you're too old for that.
Mm.
So I want to get that affection and respect I know so many people do have for some older people in their lives. I want to get that right through our community.
It's interesting you talk about that, Susan, because I often say such similar words about people with disability that most people know a person with a disability in their life as an individual, but it's hard to translate that positive view from the individual to the broader group. And you've said almost the same thing about older people in Australia. So there's some fascinating comparisons, aren't there?
Oh, certainly. And I think the basis of discrimination is very similar, be it disability discrimination, age discrimination, race discrimination, sex discrimination. The base to discrimination is not recognising a person for what they are, but lazily allowing some negative stereotype to take up that space.
Yeah. Mature age workers can make a major contribution to our workforce, can't they? What do you think the nature of that contribution is?
Well, it will vary according to the worker, but I mean, first of all, there are people in their 50s and 60s in the workforce who are doing a good job, who are contributing. Now, their employers should be smart enough to know that they can't afford to lose all that knowledge and experience.
Mm.
So employers should be negotiating with their older workers to make sure that they're able to continue as long. Of course, it's about performance. Mm. Obviously, if someone gets to the stage where they can't contribute, then that's a different stage of their life.
Mm.
But where you've got people who are able and willing to contribute, employers should be much more aware than they are in many cases of this. In some cases, some older workers will say, look, I've been contributing at a huge pace for all these years. Now I would like to continue a contribution at a slower pace.
Mm.
I would like to come in 3 days a week, or I would like to work half days, not full days. I can see how this can be designed. I can help you reorganize the work so that I continue to, you know, make a contribution. Mm. But why lose someone completely when being a little more flexible, you can keep them and make a bit of space to have perhaps a new young worker come in to learn from the older worker. So I see that happening, but I'm also aware already of the many, many sad stories of people who got made redundant and they're only in their 50s, maybe early 50s, and since that time they have not been able to get back in because they believe that the recruiting agencies or the employers say, oh, we don't want to be bothered with anyone over 45. Now that has to be tackled. First of all, it's unfair, it's unjust, but it also makes no economic sense because employers are calling out for more skilled workers. Well, if they're going to cut off the very ones that we know are there and anxious to start again, then they're doing their business a damage and they're doing our Australian economy a damage.
Yeah. Yeah. What other problems have you come across or heard of in terms of age discrimination? The mature age worker issue is a major one, and you've explained really clearly how that needs to be tackled. What are the other things you think you'll come up against?
Well, I've heard quite a few very alarming stories about age discrimination in health services. I've heard of people being refused operations or advised to delay operations for a couple of years because, after all, you're in your 60s and, you know, take a couple of Panadol. We don't really have to address your problem with the same speed as if you're in your 40s. Now, again, that's a terrible injustice to the individual who may need surgery or some other treatment.
Mm.
But, again, it's also building up problems for the future. If you have someone in their 60s who requires a particular surgery to go back to full quality of life and you don't make that available, then, of course, the person will get weaker and weaker, more and more in need of publicly provided support, and so it's a lose-lose.
Mm.
So I imagine health services is going to be an area where I hear a lot. There's also something, Graham, you've led the way on, and that is the way houses are built, apartments are built,
mm.
and how they can be adapted to suit the needs of a person with disability or an older person. Now, a lot of people would able to stay in their homes in their senior years. They would like to, but they can't get permission from the local council to adapt the place. Now, it's not always the case. I think some local councils are very aware of this and constructive, but others put every barrier in the way of people such that sometimes they feel, look, I really want to stay here, but I can't get the ramp I need, or I can't change the door in a way that makes it safe for me to get in and out, so I'll just have to go into care, which is not what I want, and it costs the country a lot more.
And it's not just local councils, of course. It's we see complaints here, certainly on the basis of people's disability, and I would think on the basis of their age as well, where body corporates won't let you make minor changes to units to facilitate the staying in place. So it is a concern. What about, apart from older Australians, what about issues for younger Australians?
Look, I am already aware that young Australians, particularly going newly into the workforce, perhaps into a casual, unskilled job that they really need and they're really keen to learn something from, are exploited.
Mm.
They're told, yes, we'll pay you 5 hours a day. When they get there, they find they have to work 8 hours a day and no pay. They're harassed in the workplace. They're asked to do things they can't possibly do. And alarmingly, sometimes they're sexually harassed. They don't know their rights.
Mm.
They're new to the workforce. They're scared. They want to, you know, start getting a career going. They don't know whether to say something or not say something. Now, we should be protecting and supporting those young people.
Mm.
And that will be part of the brief.
Mm. Well, at the beginning of this interview, I talked about, you know, older Australians and younger Australians, and then I made the comment perhaps slightly flippantly, about ageist language. But does ageist language actually demonstrate an attitude that we need to change? Is that something that you'll be encouraging people to have a think about as well?
I'll be listening to how people feel about that. Mm. When ageist language is used to be insulting and to exclude older people, I think we have to endeavour to get a change and improvement. Sometimes, though, we can use it ourselves to make a few jokes about ourselves, and that can break the ice. I mean, I often refer to myself and my women friends as the nannas, and I say, well, watch out, here come the nannas. Mm. And we think, well, we love being nannas anyway, but
sure,
we think it's quite getting on the front foot to call us nannas before anyone else does.
Yeah.
So in that way, it can be a bit of fun and a bit of breaking the ice. But where it's used in a nasty and exclusionary way, it should stop.
Mm. Well, Susan, thank you very much. Age discrimination is an emerging area of discrimination law, and I think you've got much to do as the first Age Discrimination Commissioner. So welcome to the Commission.
Thanks, Graham, and I'll be looking for your advice and assistance as I find my way.
I'm very happy to provide it. And thanks to all of you listening to PodRights. Remember, this podcast is for you, so if you have a suggestion of someone with whom I should talk or a comment on the podcast, please email me at podrights@humanrights.gov.au or find me and message me on Facebook or Twitter. Just search for Graham Innes, GraeMeinnes. And keep your podcatchers ready for the next PodRights in the series, because human rights is for everyone, everywhere, every day. I'm Graham Innes. Goodbye for now.